This is Tamsin Granger.
And Dan Abuhoff.
With Tamsin and Dan Read the Paper. Today is February 19th, 2017, and we're fortunate to have guest stars today. Okay,
stars.
Daniel, you want to introduce them?
No.
Well, we have Mark Snyder and Dixon Cuff.
That's right, you heard correctly. Mark Snyder and Dixon Cuff.
Hello.
And who are Mark Snyder and Dixon Cuff?
They're our friends.
More importantly than that, Mark Snyder is, for those of you watching Mozart in the Jungle, in the critical pilot episode, when the female protagonist is about to rehearse to become the principal oboe player, they have to have someone else play oboe, who's also rehearsing, who is going to show her to be a great oboe player by comparison, the impresario who runs it, the maestro, Gail Gersel, how do you pronounce his name? Something like that, is going to react with such indifference that we know inevitably the female protagonist will be chosen. And that person playing the oboe, is Mark Snyder.
Yes.
Okay. And yet, as useful as that skill is, if you cut your finger, do you go to Mark?
No.
Who do you go to?
You go to Dixon.
You go to Dixon, because Dixon is an experienced nurse, and he's able to look at a cut and say, I would have someone look at that.
It's true.
I didn't do it nearly as well as Dixon does it. He's very good. But the reason that they're here is because they're theater buffs, and I think...
Well, they're not theater buffs. They're normal people.
Normal people wouldn't do what they just did. They're on a different plane. But I'll let them explain themselves. Why don't you explain to the folks what you guys just did?
How you spent your weekend.
Yeah, well, this weekend we were fortunate to go to see the Glass Menagerie. Friday night, we had a wonderful Christmas present from Tamsin and Dan.
Thank you.
To that. So we saw Sally Field in that. And then while we were in New York, we stayed overnight and we decided to go see Sunset Boulevard afternoon.
They saw two shows in 2 days.
It's like they're from Iowa or something.
Well, to give them credit, Iowa wouldn't have been the Glass Menagerie and Sunset Boulevard. It would have
been
Aladdin.
That's kind of
I give them that. But listen, I want to cut to the chase here because I know you guys are very busy. And here's why I want to back up the notion that you're a little bit out of control. Rumor has it that you not merely saw Sally Field in the Glass Menagerie, but you chatted up Sally Field after the performance.
Yeah.
How'd that come about? Let me guess. Did she stand outside the door after it was over, waiting for you guys to come
by? She did, just for us. Just for us to see.
Or was it the opposite?
No, in my head it was the other way.
So you guys waited outside to catch her?
She was very gracious. She was so
nice. We waited on each side of this.
Well, of course she's great. She's the flying nun.
She's gidget.
Of course she's gracious. She was gidget, exactly. Yeah. What did you expect?
I didn't expect anything.
You expected Sybil.
Yeah.
But in fact, because we haven't seen it, and with any luck, we probably won't. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, but I will say I'm a little leery. At this point of Tennessee Williams. We've seen a lot of Tennessee Williams, and I wonder if it's dated. But you saw it. We didn't. What do you think?
I thought it was excellent. I didn't know anything about Tennessee Williams, to be honest with you, or anything about the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I had nothing to compare it to. But I thought it was very well done.
Yeah, it's dated. It was very basic. I mean, no set at all. You saw the back walls of the theater.
Really?
And just as minimal props.
Really?
Just the table on the stage, that was it.
Really?
Yeah.
This is the one with the gentleman caller, if I recall correctly.
Yes, the gentleman caller.
Yeah. Gentleman caller.
Said that quite a few times in the show.
Yes, well, it's a key phrase.
Yeah.
All right, well, look, you enjoyed it. That's great.
I did, and I thought what was really neat about it was that disabled girl that was in the show. I guess he has a disabled sister in real life.
Yeah, Amanda plays a character, so she's amazing.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, Sally Field was great.
And the audience reacted strongly, positively? Or
I thought it was, they went crazy
ovation.
At the end.
Really?
Yeah. Well, Sally Fields cried. It was pretty
That's hard to do with Glass Menagerie. I mean, I'm knowing, it's not like it's the Music Man. I mean, it doesn't end on an upbeat note, if I remember.
Yeah, well, the guy that was in it,
Joe Mantello.
Yeah.
Joe Mantello's the director, isn't he? Or is he?
Yeah, he does both.
He's in it, too?
Yeah, he's in it.
You're kidding me.
I didn't know he did Wicked, which I read about.
He did Wicked. Well, that's impressive. Did you have plans to go to another play on Saturday? Were you
moved? I saw one more Glenn Close billboard. I was like, I think we should go see this.
Really? So you were impressed by those billboards?
I was. I was impressed. They got me.
All right, so you went, and you were familiar with
Not a clue. And I was blown
That seems
away.
To be your approach.
Not a clue.
That's the kind of theater goer they're looking for, Iowa or New York. So, and you saw that at matinee?
Yeah.
And how was that?
That was unbelievable.
Really?
She got 3 standing ovations, and then they kept, you know, clapping. I didn't know she played it before, though.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
in London, primarily.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah. No, she is, look, the reviews I've seen, you, for that, you agree, Mark?
Yeah, that's great.
All right, so I'd refer to a Wall Street Journal review, which is doesn't make them the greatest experts in the world. Let me say, the Times, first of all, said it was good. They weren't bowled over because it's not their favorite.
Okay.
Andrew Lloyd Webber, who's not their favorite.
Yeah.
And they loved her, though. They said she was fantastic, and they said she really has one great song, and she puts it over, and it's unbelievable.
Exactly. That's probably
see, it's a microphone. You can't do hand motions.
Oh, you're going to have to say hand motions. I'm not getting filmed here.
Yeah.
I even dressed up.
So. Yeah. Another mistake. No, in your case, it's
really not a lame thing.
Yeah. So, see, Tampa gets one every once in a while. You gotta keep your eyes open. The journal actually said it had an interesting observation. They said the problem with, and they like Glenn Close also, but the problem with the show in their mind has always been that it's just the movie was so great that it's very hard to capture that in the show. And the movie was, in their mind, large, if you will. Mm-hmm. It dealt with all these large. I don't know if you guys even saw the movie. Mm-hmm. I haven't had it since, maybe.
It's a shock that we haven't. I know.
No. It's not a shock. I totally expected it. But you were aware of the movie. The movie was a big deal.
Yeah.
Say yes.
Yes.
So it's yes. It's Gloria Swanson and William Holden. It's like an iconic movie with Billy Wilder. But what's interesting here is that they say that... I don't know, maybe it's William Wyler. I might get the record wrong. But what's interesting is they said it went to Sondheim first to consider writing the score, and he said it's so big it can only be an opera.
Not a musical.
And he turned it down on this basis. Although I tell you something, if you're going to say something's only an opera but not a musical, you can't make an opera. You get Andrew Lloyd Webber and you're close.
Right.
If you get that on close, you're close.
I get it. That was good.
All right. Well, that's good. You guys are, but we have to also ask about Evan Hansen,
which you saw a while ago.
Yeah, about a month ago.
I love that one. I thought that was a hit for me.
There's a really moving, emotional story.
Just about present day, like, you know, kids and.
Tell us in two senses, because I not only do we not know what that's about too well, but I think most people don't know what that's about.
It's about a very shy, insecure kid that goes to like a high school and just feels like he's a nobody, really, right?
Yeah, and then his
circumstances change that he makes up this lie and it just becomes this thing, and
like on social media, it becomes a big thing or what?
Everywhere.
Yeah,
and he can't back off it. Is that it?
Right. This lie just kind of takes over, but then it also changes his life as well. Yeah. It makes him be more of a person that can. That people notice, I guess.
Yeah, it's a lie that kind of, he doesn't want other people to be hurt or to get hurt, so he kind of keeps, you know, propelling the lie further and further.
Well, look, I wouldn't say it's under the radar because we heard of it and we actually recommended it to you, I think. But having said that, I don't think it gets that much play, and yet I sense that it's going to be like, getting a lot of Tonys, that he's going to get the Tony for best actor. Well,
yeah. That's what I think the show is him. To my
right.
Ben Platt. Is
it? Yeah, he makes the show. I mean, at the ending, everybody was crying. I mean, it was just very emotional.
And he, you know, I'm not going to remember. Maybe you remember. He was in Pitch Perfect or something.
Pitch Perfect.
All right, so he's got a pretty commercial background. He's not like he's a classic.
No, I don't think so.
No. It's supposed to be very affecting, and of course, it's written. By the folks who were also involved in La La Land.
I didn't know that.
Although I should point this out. They wrote the words and music to Evan Hansen. They only wrote the words for La La Land. They were only hired to write the words, which is kind of interesting because it's the old Steve Sondheim story. When Steve Sondheim was starting his career, you know, he writes words and music.
Mm-hmm.
But he got his first job, he wrote the words for Gypsy. And then West Side Story came around and they said, we have Leonard Bernstein to write the score, will you write the words? And his reaction was, I don't want people to think I don't write music. And he was hesitating, so he went to his mentor, Oscar Hammerstein, who said, in his best Oscar Hammerstein way, what are you, out of your mind? And he wrote Officer Krupke. So there you have it. And I think these guys had the same reaction. They said, you know, I know we write both, but, you know, for the opportunity to be in La La Land, we'll write the work.
All right.
So we'll come back to that. All right, so that's great. So stick around. We're going to cover a lot of the lower-level stuff we usually do in the middle of this show, but feel free to chime in. But then we want to come back to movies, including La La Land, where we're going to look for your input on that, too. So just quickly, on the week, which might have been a week to forget in some respects, because the Times, which is unhinged by Donald Trump in the same way perhaps Donald Trump is unhinged, had a the theme for the week in the Times was, well, things couldn't be worse, which is almost a headline in one of their op-ed pieces. But I will say, before, just on a quick mention on Trump without going into it, there's a classic letter to the editor in the Times, and here's how it came about. On Valentine's Day, a bunch of psychiatrists co-signed a letter which said that Donald Trump suffered from some kind of psychiatric disorder, and therefore he should be disqualified as president. The next day, a letter appears in the Times which says, most amateur diagnosticians have mislabeled President Trump with the diagnosis of narcissistic personality disorder. I, this is the writer, wrote the criteria that define this disorder, and Mr. Trump doesn't meet them. He may be a world-class narcissist, but this doesn't make him mentally ill, because he does not suffer from the distress and impairment required to diagnose mental disorder. Mr. Trump causes severe distress rather than experiencing it, and has been richly rewarded rather than punished for his grandiosity, self-absorption, and lack of empathy. It is a stigmatizing insult to the mentally ill to be lumped with Mr. Trump.
Well, we will
comment on that, but it is a great letter. I'm sure the Times wish they wrote it themselves. And the other things couldn't be worse points, and we're not going to dwell on them, but it was that kind of week. The headline, and this was carried in the Wall Street Journal, but other places too, no drugs for back pain, guidelines say. What does that mean? That means that you can't really fix your back with surgery. You can't do it with serious drugs. At best, you take ibuprofen. And the end of the article says, but that doesn't work too well either. So you're out of luck with respect to back pain. So that was kind of a negative word. But what's worse than this, in terms of there's nothing you can do that's right, is the headline in the journal, Flag Football More Dangerous for Children Than You Think. And what the article says, and it has the statistics to back it up, is flag football is more dangerous than tackle football. Which means, basically, you can't win. There's nothing you can do for your children that's not going to screw them up. But Tamsin and I have discussed this before. One observation that's made is people worry about how they're bringing up their children. But the truth of the matter is, they're probably screwing them up in ways that they could never possibly imagine. And that's probably still the case. But
well,
anyway,
one of the reasons that flag football is more dangerous,
they
say, is because in flag football, what happens is two people run into each other. So you have two head injuries at once instead of one person.
Really? Is that the reason?
So that's why it's more dangerous. It's a statistical thing. I'm surprised that a mathlete like yourself didn't latch on to that immediately.
You know what my reaction was? Thank God for the NFL, because if it wasn't for the NFL, these guys would be playing flag football and killing themselves. But now they're playing NFL football.
I think it's a laughing matter, didn't you?
All right.
What else you got?
Well, I was just going to say, to sum up the week, as far as I'm concerned, this is a great quote from P.G. Wodehouse. In commenting on the lies of oysters, said existence for them must be one damn thing after another, which is, food for thought. So however rough our week was, the oysters have it worse. But go ahead, Tamsin.
Okay.
What do you have?
And what do I have? Yeah. You passed on to me a nice article about Frank Lloyd Wright houses. And it's written by a guy, Fred Bernstein, who has been following couples who are still living that commissioned houses from Frank Lloyd Wright when he was an older man. And so he started tracking them about 10 years ago or something, and there were a few dozen, and now it's down to like five couples. And they're like in their 80s and 90s. But when they were young, when they were like in their 30s, they were commissioning Frank Lloyd Wright houses. And so it's a funny article, and it talks about what they went through trying to deal with. You know, Frank Lloyd Wright was pretty much a diva. And it was a lot of money for them. And The cost overrun was anywhere from twice as much as they thought to three times. And he would just say to them, don't worry about the money. The money will always come. It always does.
That's right.
And this is the best investment that's you'll right. ever make.
He'd worry about the money if he didn't get it. But he said to them, don't worry about raising the money to pay me.
Right. And they had some funny aspects of the design, which I thought were interesting. For one thing, frankly, right, designed the children's bedrooms with doors outside to the yard. And this one couple said, no, we're not having that. We don't want our kids wandering off. And of course, in this day and age, you don't want people just wandering in, right? And he was a little bit tough on it. And they said, no, they were adamant. Windows, no doors. And then there was one couple who wanted to have just a couple of dormitory rooms for their six children to share. And he was adamant and he said, every child needs its own space, needs some space to be alone and meditate. And the bedrooms he designed were very small. He just had room for a bed and like a desk, not much more than that. So it's, you know, a very interesting story to...
Can you imagine having Frank Lloyd Wright as your architect? I mean, it's that would be intimidating.
When you're in your 30s, can you imagine dealing with him?
Right.
You know? I know, Sadie could deal with them.
Sadie
but there is the rest of the world.
Right.
But the one funny thing that you caught on to is the, you know, the value of Frank Lloyd Wright houses today. You'd think they'd all be astronomical.
Right.
But in fact, they're not. And there's a couple reasons for that. One is they're very high maintenance. They're tough to keep up and take care of. And the other reason is... that they are often very, very often constrained by preservation laws and codes protecting them. And the fun part of this article is too. I saw Dan's eyes kind of go when I said Fred Bernstein. You're right. That Fred
Bernstein.
Is that
Bernstein. Who it is?
Yes, yes. It's the author of this is a guy that we knew at Princeton. He was a little bit younger.
I went to high school with him.
What? Oh, really?
Yes.
Now, how could you go to high school?
He was 2 years behind me in school.
He had to be like 3 years. He graduated in 78.
Look, a lot of people were behind me. I couldn't keep a close eye on them.
The fact is, not from high school. It wasn't.
No, I knew him at Princeton.
Working in the dining halls. Did he work in the Commons?
I thought it was he in New York. Whatever it is, we know him. Okay, yeah. That's the point.
So that's funny. Every once in a while, his byline comes up. It's like, oh.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, Fred A. Bernstein.
That's hysterical. Well, in any event, sometimes we do like to celebrate. Older people accomplishing things. Sometimes, sadly, that shows up in an obituary. But there was one obituary of Barbara Carroll, and which mentioned that she was playing sort of piano at like Lincoln Center or Dizzy's Jazz Club in Lincoln Center into her 90s. But the truth of the matter is, she gets aced out this week because there's an article called "Lessons from a 105-year-old." That's right, 105-year-old who is the world record holder for most miles in an hour on a bicycle, riding a bicycle. It's like, you know, 15, 16, 17 miles an hour, 105 years old. And they used him for a study to show that even at an advanced age, you can increase your VO max, your cardiovascular capacity. And the way they did this was, and this is kind of incredibly ominous. This is, again, 105. They had him begin a new training regimen under this program about 80% of the workouts were at easy intensity, 12 on a scale of 20, with 20 being almost unbearably strenuous, according to Mr. Marchand's judgment. Mr. Marchand's 105. So they're sitting there saying, okay, Mr. Marchand, we're going to establish the scale of 1 to 20. Raise your hand when it's unbearably strenuous. And, okay, let me just, for those guys who are about to do something like this with somebody else, when you're dealing with someone 105, when it's unbearably strenuous, they flatline, okay? That's what unbearably strenuous is. So that's a little on the dangerous side in my mind. But in any event, this guy is the world record holder for most miles, 104, 105, which is because no one else has ever done it, as you might expect. And he's hoping to break more records in the future. So it's
good for him. We applaud him.
We do applaud him. It's very impressive.
And he eats yogurt and chicken. And
oh, yes. Yeah. He's got the diet you'd expect.
And he's sociable. Apparently being sociable.
Yeah, that's
what... live a long time.
Next time you're trying to get up a hill on a bicycle, just say to yourself, am I sociable or am I not sociable? And it just flies by. Right. Yes. Hampton, you had something else.
Well, the Times this weekend had a big insert on French, the new essentials of French cooking. And it was, you know, about the things you should really know how to make from the French classics. Mm-hmm. And so, they always say that for French food, for French cooking, technique is the deal.
Right.
Sorry about that. For Italian cooking, it's all about the shopping. And you just get the best stuff you can and try not to screw it up. But so with French, you have these things like soufflé, an omelette, quiche, cassoulet, coq au vin, ratatouille, et cetera.
And I like the way you say that again.
Yeah.
Say
it right there. Later, dear.
When we're alone.
Do you want to
sue yourself.
You can go.
When you're alone.
And to some extent, I agree. Soufflé is a wonderful thing. We have a tradition of chocolate soufflé for Christmas.
Yeah, the tradition dessert. Is you make it for
yeah.
us.
That's and it's great. Soufflé is a great thing. It's yeah. light. It's just a delight. And quiche, when I guess in the 70s, we ate quiche like crazy, and then later 80s and 90s, it became a little passé, and yet I was still making it,
yeah.
And people still love it today. It's like your parents' favorite food that
yes,
they make
well,
for them. It's so
there are reasons
it's
for
soothing.
That, but yes,
it's
yes,
really
right.
It's really soothing. So, if you want to catch up on your French cooking, look up that article in the New York Times. There's also a nice recipe in the magazine section for a prune frangipane tart.
Oh, that's a can't miss.
Yeah, and then the first half of it is, yes, you guessed it, Americans are afraid of prunes.
But a frangipane, though, a frangipane tart, that's a can't.
Yeah, the almond, that means that's almond cream.
Of course.
Stuff. Okay, so, we like prunes. I make an unbelievable prune ice cream.
It is true.
So, yes.
Unbelievable.
With spiced pecans. So, but that's all I have.
All right, well, there's one sports article before we go back to our guest stars and the movies, and that is... An article caught my eye about Ahmad Rosario, who is the coveted rookie of the New York Mets, who's going to be a star of the team in just a few years. And the article, though, is not about his abilities, which are substantial, but it's about education. He said, what distinguishes Ahmad Rosario, who's a player from the Dominican Republic, is that unlike many players there, he has a fantastic education. And I'm thinking to myself, gee, I thought he was a young guy. How did he finish college? It turns out he didn't finish college. He has a great education because he went to high school. He finished high school. Why do they say that? Because a lot of players go to the major leagues from the Dominican Republic. Only 18% of them have graduated high school.
Wow.
So the first reaction is, wait a minute. Are they like pulling these kids out and exploiting these kids? And Major League Baseball responds immediately and they say, no. You know why? Because the general average for youngsters in Dominican Republic graduating high school is 18%. It's the same percentage. So that's not what's going on. And yet, it makes you appreciate what's going on in the major leagues. Every team, and the Mets have several players like this. Rosario will be one of them. Juan Lagares is another. Juan Lagares did not graduate high school. But I could name many stars that are well known to you, Dixon, I'm sure, in the major leagues, who didn't graduate. And they come with very little background. Very little money, don't speak English, and they're placed on a ball team with a lot of guys who have had several years of college, who by now are multimillionaires, and it's an interesting mix of people, to say the least. And so the challenges that these kids face, I mean, hitting the ball is just one of them. I mean, it's just must be an enormous...
Cultural
challenge is amazing. I mean, even to order in a restaurant if you don't speak English is tough enough, but not to be able to fall back on any education at all just makes it... that much tougher. So it certainly gave you something to think about. So let's get back to the reason that you guys were brought in at great expense, which is to talk about arts and
entertainment. We're not cheap either.
All right. Now, here, I let you guys take the lead in terms of the three plays that you had to comment on, but I'm going to take a little bit of the lead here. And that is this, just because it's a matter of time, and I just want to sort of telescope this. And it comes really as much as anything from a conversation I had with my brother, my older brother, who I spent a lot of time with this weekend. And he's very knowledgeable about movies and film generally, but he's a little bit, I'm not going to use the word I'm not going to use any word. I'm just going to say he's one of those folks of the ilk that he's highly suspicious of movies that come out of Hollywood. And, you know, his initial reaction without even thinking hard about it is, what are you going to see at the Academy Awards? Those aren't the great films. Those are highly commercial films. And what the point I made to him, which I think is a fair point, is that there are three films this year which stand up to anything in my mind in terms of quality of film. In fact, I think are far superior to the picture that won Best Picture last year, which was Spotlight, which was fine, which was good, but it was conventional. And those three films, in my mind, I think in Tamsin's mind also, are Moonlight, Manchester by the Sea, and La La Land. So before we say anything about them, I have to put you guys on the spot. Okay. Did you see them?
I saw La La Land.
That's all right. So I want you to hold your fire on La La Land. We're going to get to that one third. Okay. And you haven't seen the others, which is okay, but that's part of my point. A lot of people haven't seen the others. Mm-hmm. Moonlight has only made $19 million. The way ticket prices are, to make $19 million, let me put it this way. If you scale down the promotion for that movie to what we do for this podcast is more popular than us. Okay? So it's crazy that you can spend what they've spent to distribute that, and it's only $19 million. No one's seeing the movie, but it's a super movie, don't you think, Tamsin?
It is a super movie. Yeah. And we didn't see it because of any publicity or because we thought we should or we were even interested in the story. I heard a clip from it in an interview, and I just was stunned by it.
Right.
I said, we have to see this.
Right.
And it was well worth it. Visually, it was worth it, and the writing was outstanding. The acting was outstanding.
So just the focus, this is just remember, the reason, if I can pick one criterion on which these movies sort of are superior and I feel comfortable putting them forward this way, is there are moments in all these movies that are transcendent. Mm-hmm. That's not just a matter of the narrative or I really identified with this character or I kind of like this. It's not that. They're moving. You almost forget where you are. It takes you out of yourself and you see something differently. And it's not even the words the characters say. It's something that's going on in the film. The best example, and it's not the only example, Moonlight, was the one where the character who's a drug dealer in the first third takes the young boy swimming.
Right? Teaches him to swim.
Teaches him to swim. And you know, we're not going to give away much of the movie, but he is a hard-bitten drug dealer, right? And this kid is a kid who's picked him on. At that stage, what is he, 7 years old? What's your guess?
Yeah, very young, but very it's an extremely tender moment.
And for reasons, you might think there's no rhyme or reason, they end up in the ocean, and this drug dealer has taken a shine to this kid, sees something in him, and you see something in him, to, in the drug dealer himself, the way he responds to the kid, and he teaches him how to swim. There's no dialogue that's memorable, but it's a scene which rises above and it takes you someplace else. Mm-hmm. When you go to Manchester by the Sea, which I know you didn't see, we're going to get to La La Land in just a second, but Manchester by the Sea is, it's similar. It's just in that there's a scene in Manchester by the Sea, okay, which I'm not going to go into detail because you haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. But the scene in Manchester by the Sea, which is a story I think everyone knows about this loss that this the Casey Affleck character suffers, in which he meets up with his ex-wife, who was the mother of his wife at the time the loss occurs, right? And you cannot remember, you know, I can remember maybe a line of dialogue from them, but it's not the dialogue. It's a scene that may go on for 25 seconds, and it is so moving that it's like to everybody. I mean, you could be getting your oil changed and talking to the guy who changed your oil. Did you see Manchester by the Sea? And he will say to you, that scene with Michelle Williams. And I am not kidding. I am not kidding. Yeah. It is so rare that happens. And now that's just not that scene. That's been built up through the careful filmmaking all the way through, mm-hmm. right? But it's movie, people used to call it movie magic or something like that. And it's a transcendent moment. And then we go to La La Land. Now, I'll take a chance. Did you like La La Land?
I liked it.
Okay. All right. Now, I know I could tell that you didn't love it. All right. But I'm going to tell you why I like it. But I'm interested in your view.
Mm-hmm. I just thought it was a little slow.
Okay.
I don't know. What did you think? You saw it with me.
Yeah. I mean, it was a little, I mean, action wasn't.
But it was different. It was a different movie. It sticks with you.
Let me tell you, look, first of all, everyone's got their own opinion. This is just my opinion and Tam's opinion when Tamsin chimes in. I think Tamsin liked La La Land also. But let me take, my take on La La Land was this, that it's just, it also, it sort of brings you into the minds of the characters in a way, and it uses the music for that. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting to me about that is it's not like it's got music that the Rodgers and Hammerstein music that you can then have Doris Day record and you're going to sell records. You don't, it's very hard to remember any song from La La Land when you walk out or to hum it when you're walking the next day. The music's just there just to open up your thinking a little bit and sort of get you into the psyche of the characters. And it's very effective. And, I mean, the scene that I would pick out, that to me was transcendent was a scene in which Emma Stone is singing at the end of the audition. And she starts singing, and you're watching that, and you say, she doesn't sing that well. And she doesn't sing that well. And I've heard people say, oh, it's an homage to Audrey Hepburn, which is a silly thing to say because Audrey Hepburn couldn't sing. They dubbed her voice in My Fair Lady. No one's doing an homage to Audrey Hepburn. But she goes on, and she invests so much in it, and there's so much feeling in it that it sort of wins you over. I guess at the end of the day, my take, but I think people should see these films. And make their own decision, honestly. But my take is, you have three movies. One is, Moonlight, about loneliness, really, and that's what I think it's about.
And human connection.
And the lack of human connection. And then you have Manchester by the Sea, which is about loss, and you have La La Land, which is about life choices, basically. And if the first two movies are like bullet trains of emotion. Mm-hmm. And what's the thing with La La Land a little bit more, which to me is the best picture, is if they're bullet trains, La La Land's like Grand Central Station. I mean, you have, because it's a more complex subject, mm-hmm. if not a more important subject, being life choices, things come from all different angles. And there are many scenes that start and you say, where's this going? How could this end? How can this land? How can this relate? And for me at least, they all landed. And to me, actually, the closest analog to that film, is Birdman a few years ago. Mm-hmm. People compared it to movie music. But in any event, I think you guys would probably agree with me this much, was that they're all that La La Land's worth seeing.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I will tell you that when you guys stop going to Broadway plays for just a few minutes, the other two movies are worth seeing. You have to see them. I mean, I know you're big spenders. I know you're comfortable spending $100 a ticket, and you're going to be uncomfortable sitting with people just spend 10, but it's still worth your time.
But we might do two movies in a day.
Have you seen Hidden Figures? Because I really like Hidden Figures.
Yes,
Hidden Figures. That was pretty good, too.
Tamsin saw Hidden Figures. I did not see Hidden Figures. And we've talked about that on the show. That's the problem.
Somebody
missed an episode.
He fell asleep.
Oh, no. Yeah. we'll edit that out. That's okay. It's not a problem. Oh, man.
No, we talked about it twice, I think.
Twice? I think every show we talk about it. Yeah. We end with an homage to Hidden Figures.
I like that very much.
Yes, we did.
It's a good play. Yes.
All right.
So just to recap, if they want to know more about Mark Snyder, they should people should go out and conjure up Mozart in the Jungle.
I think Mozart in the Jungle is great. Do you watch it?
I haven't.
Oh, it's very good.
Are you serious?
Yes.
You're in the show and you don't watch it?
I haven't. I have to go. It's really the Amazon Prime.
But I don't know if this is going to make the final cut, but I'll just ask you. I mean, I can't even ask. Because they set up this woman as being a superior oboe player.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask you whether, listening to it, and you obviously have a trained ear because you play the oboe, is there something about her oboe playing that's special?
I think it's actually the same person playing all the kind of music throughout for the oboe playing.
And is that person excellent?
It's not the actress.
That person's good?
Yep, definitely excellent.
Okay.
Beautiful sound.
Because I will tell you, if there's one instrument, this is a show about entire orchestra, if there's one instrument that's the star of that show, it is the oboe.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, guys. It was
Thank
great
you
to
for
have
having
you here.
This was great.
All right.
And we hope to have you again because we can't keep up with you in terms of seeing shows.
I have a lot to live up to here.
All right. Happy President's Day. Okay. And we're out.